Welcome to the Footy Museum and the Footy Museum Podcast. Maria and I are both remote today. I am in my secret escape pod in some undisclosed location, also known.
And I am in a coat closet.
Oh,
not really.
You still got those dramatic blinds, though. That's good.
Yes, but it's a north-facing window.
Well, this week we are talking to Christy Kivy from the FC Cincinnati supporter group, The Pride, but she's also involved in all aspects of the supporter groups in Cincinnati, and she also works for the Cincinnati chapter of American Outlaws. So she's very involved in supporter culture, and she is going to walk us through many of the really impressive TIFOs that have been made for FC Cincinnati over the past couple of years. Oh, I wanted to mention something, and it's something I mentioned to you, and you're like, duh, it's obvious, but I think it's... It's still worth mentioning. So since we've started these interviews with different supporter groups, specifically those involved in the creation of TIFO in Major League Soccer, the top level.
And what did you just notice, Justin?
Men's league. I didn't just notice, but I think that we should, it's worth pointing out is that the driving force behind all of these successful supporters groups, it's always a woman. Primarily, and a young woman are the people we're speaking to. And I think that it's important to acknowledge that this league and MLS pulls a lot from these supporter groups and the amazing TIFOs they make. And in the stands, a lot of the support they're getting and a lot of kind of the enriching of their brand is coming from these young women. And I just want to point that out because we're about to talk to another really impressive one. So you were
That's great.
It's obvious. And I said, it's obvious to all of our listeners who aren't men. So I want to point it out to all the men. All right.
We'll see if we get any listener mail about that.
We get
some listener mail. Or if you didn't notice,
yeah,
let us know.
Oh, bro, man, I totally didn't. Why are you even suggesting that, bro? I can't believe you even mentioned that. Shall we jump into our conversation with Christy?
Let's jump in.
Let's do it. All right. Welcome, Christy. It's so good to see you. It's exciting to talk to you about all the things happening with the supporters at FC Cincinnati. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing great. Maria, how are you?
Great. Great as always.
We just spoke, but yeah, that's wonderful. Well, this is actually, today is a big day for FC Cincinnati because they have their second leg against Monterrey in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. How are you feeling about that?
A little nervous. I think it's a really good opportunity for us to like try out some new things with players, some of the new guys. But Monterrey, they're very good, and playing at their home stadium, which is such an iconic stadium, I think will be tough. But I think it'd be really cool if we can pull out a win, and then we'll see where we go from there.
And just remind us again, what is your connection to the club in terms of the supporter groups? What is your role and what group are you a part of?
Yeah, so I am part of the Pride supporters group. I am an executive board member, so I'm an at-large member right now. And I also am a Knight of the Bailey, so I drum in our drum corps, and I am a part of the Forge, which is our newly formed TIFO group that is members of every SG when we come together and we do TIFOs and other displays for FC Cincinnati games.
I was going to ask how many other supporters groups are part of the Forge?
I believe there's five. I think it's any supporters group that's a voting member of the IC, which is Incline Collective, which is our like big reigning umbrella over the supporters groups.
Okay, excellent.
And I'm also on the board of AO Cincy, which is American Outlaws. It's our Cincinnati chapter of the national team supporters group as well.
So you're involved with a lot of different groups, both with the national team and Cincinnati. How did you become involved with these? What drew you to it?
I grew up watching and playing soccer, so I was always a soccer fan. I mostly watched the women's national team. Mm-hmm. I grew up outside of, in between
the
Baltimore.
Gold Cup champion women's national team.
Yes. I stayed up to watch the games. But yeah, I grew up outside of DC and in the suburbs. So like my parents were never keen on driving into DC with children. It's a whole ordeal. So I didn't really watch like DC United would have been our MLS team. So I didn't have strong ties to them. And then I interned in Cincinnati in 2019 and came back with a full-time job offer in 2020. And I noticed like FC Cincinnati was like a big deal here, which I remember thinking was crazy because they were so new in MLS. Mm-hmm. And everyone was so invested already just from the quick run they had in USL. And so in, I believe it was August of 21, I went to a bar at 4 a.m, which sounds like a villain origin story. But the pitch was hosting, that's the bar, was hosting watch parties for the Women's Olympic Games.
Okay.
Which were, I believe, in Japan. Mm-hmm. So 4 a.m, and we met our friend Zach, who was also crazy enough to be at a bar in 4 a.m. And he was on the board for AOCNC as well. And he drummed as a Knight of the Bailey for FCC games. And it kind of just snowballed from there. He brought me in on the AOCNC side. He brought my husband in on the drumming side. And then we both just kind of kept like racking up involvement and positions. And yeah, it's kind of our whole life now. And I'm not
And what made you guys want to stay so involved after you were introduced? Like, what was it that you loved so much about it?
Honestly, probably the passion, like it, in the sense of community. I think moving here to work for a large company where a lot of transplants come here to work for that company, I've moved here with a lot of other interns that I worked with, who came back full time. And I think a lot of us felt really out of place, especially me not being from the Midwest. It was totally just like a different ball game out here. And I had nothing like rooting me in Cincinnati. I very, very much viewed it, the city, as like a stepping stone. I was like, maybe I'll be there 2, maybe 4 years. And now we're right about at year 4, and you know, we're renting right now, but our next step is to buy. So,
oh, nice.
If that tells you anything, I mean,
seal the deal.
I think a sense of community here has been huge. It's made my love for this city grow, for its people. Everyone is so passionate and so involved, and it's really hard not to be enamored with that aspect.
Wow. This just a reminder that this episode is brought to you by the Tourism Board of Cincinnati. If you're considering a move, please consider Cincinnati. Since you're so involved with TIFO Creation now and on the group that really coordinates all the SGs coming together to create these, I thought we could talk about some different TIFO that have been created by Cincinnati, because since the beginning, there's been a pretty distinct style and strong TIFO game coming out of Cincinnati, even way back in the brief USL existence. So I believe this was the home opener TIFO for this year. Is that correct?
It was, yes.
So can you walk us through the idea behind this piece?
Absolutely. I'm just, before we even start this, going to go ahead and say, I'm totally not going to remember to name everybody whose credit is due. Blanket thank all of the TIFO.
That's a good disclaimer.
But this specifically was the brainchild of Jeremy Schultz. He wanted to do something inspired by a local Cincinnati artist. He chose Jim Dine, who is known for those iconic art images. He's a very popular modern artist, born and raised in Cincinnati. I believe he went to art school in Cincinnati as well. And so that's kind of where the heart design came from. And we wanted for the home opener to really go in with something that was community focused, passionate, and simple. And so we added the quote, Esta ciudad es tu familia, because our star player, Lucho Acosta, he wrote a letter to the fans right before he got his contract extended that said, this city is my family. And so the quote in Spanish means back to him and the rest of the team, this city is your family. That's kind of how it all came together. And then with the drop of our canvas kit, that was a really happy coincidence. It had a lot of focus on community and art in our community, and the idea of just like simple but passionate and meaningful imagery. And so it came together really, really well.
Yeah, for anyone listening, it's a pretty massive blue TIFO with a big orange heart, and it's painted in a modulated way to kind of, I guess, reference to Jim Dine, which I think is great because Marie and I are both in the art world, and I think there should be more art references like Just a big Rothko with no explanation would be cool. One game, just like big color bands.
Pop in a Jim Dine in the just final edit of this video. Yeah, just for reference.
So you can reference. Yeah, it is very close on. I didn't realize that he was from Cincinnati. So I'm learning some art history here as well. There's been strong TIFO originally from the beginning, and the lion is definitely a strong image to work with. And that was really on display at the end of last year, where there was this three-panel giant TIFO kind of commemorating the team that had for, was it 2 or 3 years, were recipients of the Wooden Spoon, meaning the worst record in the league. And then last year, things kind of came together and you ended up winning the Supporter Shield. And this banner really kind of, I think, references that, like from the depths. Can you talk to us about this really epic, this epic piece?
Absolutely. This is one of my favorite TIFOs that we have ever done. This design was Matt Shutter. He's also a member of the Pride and the Forge. It says from the depths. In the third panel, it's a little hard to see in the pictures because all the pictures were taken from the left. The third panel says "We Rise." And then it's like a lion, which is our mascot, I guess, our imagery coming out of the depths into this like awesome sunburst. I love just like from like an artistic perspective, I love this TIFO. The bright colors were so good in the stadium, especially because it was night, so all the lights were on it. This was the biggest TIFO that we have ever done to this day. It is the first time that we used the three-panel rigging system. This TIFO felt like a culmination of everything that we had learned about TIFOs, especially last year. Last year, we did a lot of legwork to really revamp our process from designing to tracing to executing, producing, rigging, everything. And so this going up and looking just as stunning. I mean, in person, it was insane. So beautiful. So this one is really, really, really special.
Can you talk about, you said you revamped the process, and we've talked to a lot of different members of different SGs from around the country, and we're always fascinated by the process. And I'm curious what you kind of went from, what you had to change, and what was the revamp to get to production of this scale and ambition?
Yeah, so two main things is a lot of our past TIFOs have been, not in a negative way, but a bit of a one-man show in the sense that someone does the design, takes ownership of like project management, buys the paint, organizes the paint days, traces it, like leads tracing. And it was definitely becoming unsustainable. It wasn't like an intentional thing necessarily. It just tended to fall on kind of those super volunteers in the past. And so as people started getting more interested in collaboration and kind of upgrading that process to make it more efficient, make it more of a team effort, there were a lot of things that switched. So this project specifically, we had a PM for like kind of the first time who really wasn't involved in the design or like other aspects of it. And that was James Shelton. He's also a member of the Pride and the Forge. And so that made a huge difference because he was able to take a lot of the learnings that we made about the process over the last year and put it into an organized cycle almost. So this TIFO, as big and huge and massive of a project as it was done in a really smart way. The second part of that is our primary TIFO space was a big warehouse, like empty old warehouse next to the stadium that got torn down last year, like before the beginning. It was either in 2022 or early 2023 before the season started. We used to like hang fabric from the rafters to trace with a projector. And then it was big enough that we could usually lay out the whole thing on tarps and paint it and leave it there. And so we lost that space. So we had to figure out new space for painting and tracing last year. And so tracing is probably my favorite like invention that we've done. We have like a room that the stadium allows us to use that it's like a storage closet basically, but I like to call it like a giant toilet paper dispenser. We've got two what are they called? Like almost like scaffolding pieces. And then we take a giant 10-foot wooden tube. Our fabric usually comes in 10-foot bolts. And we roll it on like toilet paper, and then you unroll it bit by bit and you trace it using a projector. And we do that for each panel. And then the panels get either sewn together. We've also done glue, like adhesive, spray adhesive. And then you can lay them out. And we used a garage primarily to paint a stadium garage. And so lots of changes, lots of that tracing method, game changer. So quick, so efficient, so much easier on everyone because you're not like,
so you're actually rolling the fabric out and you trace a section and then roll that down and kind of shift the projected image to line up with whatever that next section would be. Oh, yep. I think there's a lot of people who are going to steal that idea now.
Yeah. I really cannot remember who started that like thought process, but it is like the best thing. It is so easy.
So this being the big, what, like one of the biggest raised TIFOs you've done, was done in one of the smallest spaces you've had.
It did take a while to trace.
Okay. But that's amazing.
But like it would have taken longer had we been hanging it in the warehouse, trying to do it on the rafters, moving a ladder back and forth. This is a lot more, I guess, like user friendly on our side.
So a case of limitation sparking ingenuity.
Yes.
That's absolutely good.
Well, I think this is a great example too. If when you look at this earlier TIFO from early in the club's history to this one, you also see that evolution in the kind of ambition that the supporter groups have, but also reflected by the team, right? The way the team has really risen to the top. It's a team I always hate to play in Chicago because they always figure out how to ruin things at the end. Now, a lot of teams ruin things at the end for the fire, but... Little
Acosta since he seems
really
to be extra good at
quite
it.
A bit. Yeah.
He was 22, so we made the playoffs that year, but that was like the first not wooden spoon year, I think, and in MLS. And the beginning of that year, every single game where we had a one goal lead, what at like the 87th minute ended in a tie. Like it was devastating. And I remember being like, what are we going to do about this? Guys, we got to do something about it. and we figured it out.
Now imagine if they all ended in losses in the last minute and it went on for 10 years. And then you know what speaking of making the playoffs last year, this, I believe, was this from the match against Columbus in the playoffs last year?
It was,
so you
yes.
kind of playing on the Hell is Real derby that has really grown to be one of the most dynamic rivalries in the league. But this one's a little different, right? You want to explain to us? So we're looking at a large Hell is Real banner. This one's lifted over the supporters and it is in blue and white, and there is blue and white smoke in front of it.
Yes. So we had a week. Like we won our playoff game and then we played Columbus a week later. And so we knew we had to do something simple that made a statement. And so we went with an overhead that is literally, so the Hell is Real sign, the Hell is Real derby comes from like a billboard that is on I-71 when you drive from Cincinnati to Columbus or Columbus to Cincinnati. It's like got like commandments or something on the front. And then the back says Hell is Real. And it's all in capital letters and the H is red on the billboard. And so this was like December, if I remember correctly, like it was, or like late November. So it was like freezing out. And so we had this idea that kind of spawned of like Hell is Real and hell has frozen over. And so instead of doing the classic red H, we did this like ice blue H that has icicles and like snow coming down on it for the TIFO. And so that was the idea to just like kind of be like, hell is real, but it's also really cold. but so, yeah, that was done very quickly. We wanted to get something up because it's important that Columbus knows that we hate them. can't like not make
priorities. How'd that work out last year? I forget that.
Not great. Well, you know, if the goal was for them to know that we hate them, I'd say it was a success.
Well, good job, because I think they do.
I think it's mutual. And I like the hell freezing over, obviously also a common saying for when something unexpected happens. So I think that reflects on Cincinnati winning the league last year. And then I'm noticing in this picture for the first time, the tiny little free Matt sign. And I'm assuming that references Matt Miazga, who was actually not allowed to play that game after taunting his former team.
That's such a tiny sign compared to the TIFO.
I know. Yeah, I just noticed that. So another big game, Apple TV left it out of the Messi documentary, but an epic game against Inter Miami in the U.S. Open Cup. And you guys unleashed another just really fantastic TIFO. So it says fighting for Cincinnati. Cincinnati, or just says Cincinnati Cobra, knockout Miami. And then it shows a boxer. Then it's all in the colors of Cincinnati. So who is this figure and what is the idea behind this TIFO?
And so this is Ezra Charles, which is a famous boxer from Cincinnati. And we have a huge Ezra Charles mural in downtown Cincinnati. And the artist that did that mural helped us create this TIFO as well. And it's kind of, again, a nod to local Cincinnati history and community and sports and passion and all of that. But it's also, we wanted something that, to like come strong and like, we are going to fight for this game the same way that Ezra Charles fights in a ring. And so, yeah, again, we wanted something super graphic, simple, that sent a message.
And it seems like looking at these that you are developing a real identifiable style, kind of a graphic, I would say, influence almost by comic book style, not in a negative way, like graphic novel, but like kind of the flat, very crisp. Obviously, your color palette of the team being complementary really adds into that, like really jumping colors. But do you have a sense of a style forming and that you have to have any sort of allegiance to that style, or has it really come down to game by game and kind of activation by activation?
I think it's really variable, and I think we intend for it to be that way. We don't want to box our designers in, because a huge part of the TIFO process for us is the community aspect. And so often we'll put calls out to our general members who are interested in design and say like, hey, does anyone want to try a design, like work on a design for Hell is Real or for our Pride match or whatever. And so a lot of times like I said earlier, sometimes it tends to be those super volunteers, that like core group of people who are just kind of used to it. But you can definitely see, like, again, this was in collaboration with the artist who did the mural. And so you can see that like, that's where that inspiration was pulled from. The Jim Dine one, you can see where that inspiration was pulled from. Matt Shutter, the three panel From the Depths We Rise, is a tattoo artist. And so if you look at some of the tattoos that he does, and then that design that also kind of has its own tie, as well as ones that I've done, are going to be different. And I think we really enjoy that. Obviously, the color palette is always a huge bonus if we can get it to be within the orange and blue, just because it's so recognizable for us. Those colors are, I think, pretty striking, as opposed to like black and red, or, you know, yellow and white or whatever.
just yellow. I don't know why. Just like a Charlie Brown themed yellow kit. I don't know why that came to mind, but
yeah, not a great soccer.
That reminds me. Did you see Belgium's new kit for the Euros is based on the Tintin comic character? It's like an exact replica.
Yeah, it's exact.
And I think that that should be arranged at Columbus, Belgium. Friendly, they just like the cartoon derby. Yeah, I know it's an international team versus, but anyway. And then speaking about Cincinnati icons, it seems like something that you refer to a lot. So we're looking at another overhead here, and it says "Tear the roof off this off the sucker." Is that correct? And is
that
Bootsy Collins?
Bootsy Collins.
Someone else who I didn't know was from Cincinnati either.
Cincinnati legend himself. I believe he was at this game too.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Bootsy Collins, member of P-Funk and individual legend himself. Huge, huge point of pride for Cincinnati. Obviously, Bootsy Collins is like the coolest guy ever. And so having him be from here and like openly talk about being from here is very cool. And yes, this design I loved. I helped trace and paint this one. I did not help with the design process. But the only, my only, not regret, but like wish for this one is that we had tried to rig it. This was early. This was, I want to say this was a 22 TIFO.
Okay.
But I think it would have looked even better just because with the overhead, sometimes you lose a little bit of the detail because people are under there punching the TIFO and doing dumb stuff, waving it around. And I'm like, stop. But yes, I love this one. I think it's so cool. Tear the Roof Off the Suckers, lyrics from a like very famous song of his as well. So I think that was a really cool nod to Cincinnati music history as well.
That's so interesting mentioning that with overheads, like the role of the body in the performance, because I think with some really simple ones, they benefit from the movement of people punching it. Like the Fire supporters did one for the season opener. It was very simple, just block letters, very simple phrases. And I thought it benefited a lot from them like moving it. But then you saying like as a TIFO designer, as a TIFO person, like the importance of what is actually on the image and what role your the group's performance then has in making sure that the TIFO stands out in the way it should. That's so interesting.
I think it's, there's just so many things that like I didn't think about before I started doing TIFOs. I would say that's definitely one. Our Jim Dine TIFO, our home opener from this year, it was supposed to be rigged, but we had like 20 mile per hour winds that day. And so we were able to pivot. And I think that one actually gained a lot from the movement as well, because it was very simple. The letters were very large and like the coloring was very good so that you could see them well. However, like I think when there's little details like Bootsy Collins' guitar in this one and like the glasses, like obviously this is a still picture, but in the moment it's a little harder for the rest of the stadium to be able to pick out those things that are often very intentional from a designer. And then the other thing that I just think is like a funny tidbit is my first TIFO that I did like A to Z by myself for AO Cincy was for the Morocco friendly against the men's team in June of 22. And I designed it and I was like going to pick out paint colors. And I realized I had used like 7 different grays. And that is just like so unsustainable when you think about like, you're going to have to trace it. You're going to have to color code every part that you trace. And so it's like, what am I going to do? Gray 1 through 7. Like gray, dark gray. And so I had to go back and kind of redesign it a bit to pare down in a way that was like logical for that. And I've noticed that as well with new designers who've never done something and seen the whole process. It's like, hey, you can't have 17 blues. I love you.
You can pick 4 colors for this whole thing.
Yeah.
I think that's a very interesting thing that we run into that I had not thought about ever prior.
So do you store these or do you destroy the TIFO once it's completed?
They're, for the most part, at least all the ones from the TQL Stadium days, for the most part, are under the stadium. They're just like in a, we call it the TIFO graveyard. It's like a corner of the, underneath the stadium, just they're folded up. We actually, the Hell is Real playoff TIFO from last year was painted on the back of an old TIFO.
Okay.
Because sourcing,
we hear that a lot. Yeah.
Is often very difficult, especially on a timeline like a week.
Yeah, you had a week.
So yeah, we've, and it's funny because we actually weighed some to get better ideas for rigging purposes. And that one is so much heavier than our 3-panel massive playoff TIFO.
Well, if you think about how much a gallon of paint weighs.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to come to that graveyard someday and see what's available.
Yeah, we've got, I don't know how many from the Nippert days are in there. Because I know the Hell is Real one was on the back of a Nippert TIFO, if I'm remembering correctly. And I know we for sure have any TQL Stadium AO Cincy ones in a separate area as well.
Very cool. So I wanted to talk about a few other things with Cincinnati, and this relates to the U.S. Open Cup that we referenced earlier. My first experience watching Cincinnati was when they were in the USL and in the US Open Cup and playing an MLS team, and noticing even then the amazing atmosphere that was created in Cincinnati. And I know that it's been a huge part of a lot of clubs, teams, and identity for the Fire. We're four-time winners. It's like a lot of our history. And obviously, with a lot of decisions made this year by the league about participation, and if I'm correct, since he's not participating in any manner in this year's U.S. Open Cup, either it's reserve team or it's obviously its main team is also not playing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so I saw the statement online, and I didn't know if this was a statement held by all the supporters groups or not, but it was kind of speaking out against the exclusion of Cincinnati and kind of the MLS's decision. And I'm curious if you could talk about how the fan base is feeling about the U.S. Open Cup this year.
Yeah, so this is a statement from DI, which is a very large supporters group. And we have also made it clear how we feel about it. And the club has made it fairly clear how they feel about it as well. So our front office is, you know, has made a statement that I don't want to butcher the exact wording, but that we're very disappointed that, you know, the Open Cup is a large part of our history and to not be included in that, as is any other MLS team that was excluded and has a history as well, is disappointing. We have, since this statement was put out, talked with our other SGs within the Incline Collective, and we're all pretty much on the same page that it is upsetting the way that things have kind of fallen in this vein, but that we're aligned with our club on that. And that's, I mean, I think people are trying to figure out, a lot of people feel really helpless right now and trying to figure out what they can do. And so I think that is definitely still something that is in progress at the moment.
Well, I think that's a good clarification, because a lot of fans came out angry at the clubs. And I think it is important to realize these clubs did not have a say in the decision. And there's a lot of clubs not involved who definitely wanted to be. And there's probably some involved who didn't want to be. But this was a league decision put down on the clubs. So if people are frustrated, they should understand where that decision came from.
Absolutely.
I think you guys should truly freeze over hell and work with the SGs in Columbus and work on something together about the Open Cup. I think that would draw a lot of attention. Like, some things are bigger than the biggest rivalry in MLS. I'm sure there's a red phone somewhere that you're able to talk through. Like, there's a DMZ zone.
You have to meet underneath at the billboard.
Going into Columbus, but I'll meet you here. The last thing I'll say on it is that Pat Brennan is one of our beat reporters for FC Cincinnati, has put out a lot of information from the club's statement, which I think is a great reference point for people who are really mad at the SGs to understand that we're also in alignment with our front office. So,
speaking of reporters, I know that also recently one of the local reporters, Laurel Faller, received a two-game ban from the club for her reporting. And she has said she hasn't broken any agreements and it's not really clear what's going on. I don't know if you're able to or had any insight into that situation that you could share with us.
I don't have any insider info. I mean, what she's put out is basically what we know. It seems sticky. It seems like it was probably something that was right on the edge of a rule type idea. Is like, it seems like it wasn't very cut and dry. But that's me inferring from what little information has been posted.
Yeah, you're not an official person in this. I just wondered.
No, I'm just someone on Twitter when it comes to that. Like, I read what everyone else reads.
And what can you tell us about the disappearance of Kate Middleton?
Oh my God.
Could you please pan out your camera? Could you please pan the room? Kate, if you're there, make a noise. The real reason. We got her. Send them in. We got Kate.
She's in Cincinnati.
But someone who is missing is Brandon Vasquez. We did mention tonight you will be facing his current team, Monterrey. He was someone so pivotal in the rise of the team and kind of an icon iconic player for the team, U.S. men's national team player, as he continues to be. But now he's gone to the dark side. How does it feel, especially facing him in the Champions Cup, where he scored in the first game, putting Monterrey up 1-0?
It's tough. We love Brandon. Brandon seemed to really love our team and our city as well. He thanked the fans, which is a huge thing, because Frankie Amaya still hasn't.
Oh, let me drink some more tea. Hold on.
But yes, we love Brandon. I think everyone's really like happy to see that he's clicked and is having a lot of success at Monterrey. And I mean, his reaction to his own goal against us, I think, tells you everything. He didn't even look happy.
Yeah.
And so we miss him. I think he seems like he honestly meshes with their team a lot better. He's doing incredible as a striker there, which is great. I think it's sad to see such a talented player go, but especially given that we're still finding our groove with our new strikers.
Yeah.
Like Corey Barrett is so close right now. He's got so many opportunities and he's just got to lock it in. And I think he will, but it's definitely one of those moments where you're like, man, I miss Brandon Vasquez's head right there. but yeah, it's tough. We wish him continued success, maybe not always against us, but in general. Well, and I personally am excited to see him hopefully continue to grow on the national team.
Yeah, that's going to be great for everyone. To be fair about his celebration on the goal, it wasn't that great of a goal. So maybe that is really more of the issue. No offense, Brandon.
I think it's hard to look at, like, Miazga and him are very good friends. And I think it's probably tough to be like happy to see the downfall of your friend.
Is Miazga physically capable of still being friends with someone on an opposing team?
Who would say? No, they did some PR for the game, and I think it's all in good fun. But I'm sure they're both very competitive when it comes to game time, and so I would say it probably heightens it a bit for them, because it's like a friendly competition as well on top of like something that's already your entire life and job. I would say that's got to like double some.
Well,
effort,
and they'll be teammates. They'll be teammates later this summer, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, good luck tonight in the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
10 p.m.
I still call it the league. Yeah, I'll be watching.
Ouch.
And thank you so much for speaking with us today. I learned a lot about what you guys are doing, and it is very impressive, even from opposing team standpoint. Rhea, did you want to add anything? I'm sorry.
No, thanks for joining us. Is there anything you want to add, Christy?
Just a huge shout out to our supporters. I mean, the people, especially the Forge, when it comes to TIFOs, has been a really, really great formation the last year. And I think we're all really excited on the Forge's behalf to continue to put on really incredible, intriguing, and well-executed displays and TIFOs.
All right. Well, we look forward to beating you soon. Okay. Thanks again.
Look who's joined us for the outro. Say hi, Cheerio.
That is your very weird looking cat. That was a really impressive interview. Christy is really bringing a lot to FC Cincinnati, and they should be happy to have supporters like her. And, you know, it doesn't really help the feeling of when they beat us in the final minutes of a game. So
no.
That part didn't go away. So.
Oh,
what'd
I'm
you
sorry.
Think?
Yeah, she's very impressive with her involvement. Like, she must have limitless energy. Because she's so involved. So I'm impressed by just her energy.
Yeah, that's great.
And on top of everything else.
Well, speaking of that, we should go because I have to take a nap. All right.
All right. Enjoy your nap.
Until next time, that's the story of football.
The soccer kind.
Okay. Goodbye.